Gotta clean your plate.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. When I was a kid, I couldn't go out and play until I had finished all the beef stroganoff on my plate. I hated beef stroganoff. So it usually took me 3 hours to eat it all, and by then it was dark. But it taught me not to waste food. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown believes people need reminding of that, with food prices so high and some in poor countries going hungry. Food is a major topic at the G8 summit that started today in Japan. We're joined by our correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, what did Mr. Brown say?
He is saying that saving food is as important as saving energy. And he's basing this argument on a British government study indicating that Britons alone waste 4 million tons of food a year at a cost of some $800 per home.
But what is he asking people to do?
He's asking people to be a lot more careful and not to waste food. And one of his targets, incidentally, are the big supermarket chains. He's urging them to drop these buy two and get one free promotions because he says this ends up with consumers buying too much food and then going home and ending up throwing a lot of it away. So he's aiming this call not just at individuals, but supermarkets, schools, restaurants, and government departments.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
The big story this week for the stock markets will be second quarter profit reports. The first one comes out tomorrow from Alcoa. Are oil prices and raw costs sinking bottom lines? That's what we'll be looking to find out. So far, Wall Street is off to a decent start. The Dow is up 88 points to 11,377. The NASDAQ has gained 25, about 1%. And the S&P 500 is up a few points. Oil has fallen below $143 a barrel. European stocks are 1% higher. In Japan today, the Nikkei broke a 12-day losing streak. Now let's update three corporate sagas. First, the Weather Channel has finally been sold. NBC Universal and two private equity groups have agreed to buy it. We're hearing the price is $3.5 billion. There's a report this morning that Microsoft will try again for Yahoo if Yahoo's entire board is replaced. And the Belgian beer company InBev is trying that move on Anheuser-Busch. Here's Elisa Roth.
InBev filed papers with the SEC today. It wants to get rid of Anheuser-Busch's board with the idea a new board might be more receptive to a takeover offer. Wim Hosta is an equity analyst with KBC Securities.
InBev is going after various options and scenarios in order to try to make its bid friendly.
2 weeks ago, Anheuser-Busch rejected InBev's offer of $65 a share. Anheuser was trading at $50 back then. Hosta says that premium means InBev could eventually succeed.
It's clear that InBev offers a premium to the share price that Anheuser-Busch management and board of directors have been able to achieve alone in the last couple of years.
InBev says it wants an answer about the board in 10 days. If the merger goes through, the combined company would be the world's largest brewer. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, July 7th on Marketplace.org. This week, a coalition called Healthcare for America rolls out a $40 million political ad campaign. The group is obviously supporting candidates based on their healthcare proposals. This is only the beginning of a huge wave of special interest advertising for this election. More now from Steve Henn.
Come October, we can all expect a barrage of messages like this one from Freedom's Watch.
Tell Travis Childers Mississippi cannot afford higher taxes.
Steve Weissman at the Campaign Finance Institute says expect to see more of these efforts, probably exceeding the $500 million spent in 2004.
When you take a look at it, it's not only the candidate's money, and not mainly the candidate's money, that is spent in these elections.
Congress has tried to limit ads paid for by corporations or unions that mention candidates, but
the Supreme Court has certainly shown itself very willing to be more protective of these independent groups' speech.
Tara Molloy, an attorney at the Campaign Legal Center, says that court decision could open the floodgates, and it looks like it has. The NRA announced plans to spend more than $40 million on this election. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Here's how you might sum up one of the fastest-growing sectors in biotechnology, personalized genetics. Give us a little saliva, we'll give you a map of your DNA. Today, the government opens a public meeting to discuss how these companies might be regulated. Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Some states are already cracking down. California recently sent letters to more than a dozen genetic testing companies, telling them they can't solicit business from state residents. New York has made similar moves. They worry consumers could get the wrong information about their DNA. Edward Abrams directs the Personalized Medicine Coalition. He says regulators should be careful not to stifle innovation on a new scientific frontier.
Consumer genomics is pushing that frontier forward because of its ability to market directly to consumers.
California and New York say genetic testing companies need state licenses. Linda Avey is the co-founder of personalized genetics company 23andMe. She says industry standards are needed, but that companies should help set them.
Because we're working with very complicated technologies, we do feel like that's something that we can do together as an industry.
Meanwhile, the Federal Trade Commission is investigating some personal genetics companies for false advertising. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Taiwan and China have been inching closer economically for about the last three decades. This past weekend, a major milestone, the first regular nonstop flights between the two countries. Bill Marcus reports from Shanghai.
1 million Taiwanese live in mainland China, but it's joked that another 500,000 islanders are forever stuck in transit, wasting a whole day switching planes in Hong Kong. That's all history now. This weekend, the first regular weekend flights arrived in Shanghai. Taipei resident Christina Chen and her daughters Jia Jia and Felicia were among the first off the plane.
I want my two girls to have this experience to remember for their whole life.
One Taiwanese owner of a mainland plastics factory says direct flights will make his life a lot easier.
I used to fly from Taipei to Hong Kong, but my factory is in Ningbo, so I had to take another flight from Hong Kong to Ningbo. But this time, I fly from Taipei to Shanghai, and on my way to my factory, I can visit several customers.
5 million people a year are expected to fly the $500 round trip. The mainlanders, expected to visit Taiwan, could be rocket fuel for the island's ailing economy. In Shanghai, I'm Bill Marcus for Marketplace.
There was a story in the Times of London today that several funds are being put together to snatch up bargains in the stock market. Airlines, real estate, hotels. That's great for them, but what about you and me?
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Mr. Sloan, U.S. stocks lost $2 trillion the first half of the year. We're all bleeding losses. What should we be doing at the moment?
Well, if you're someone like me, again, I'm closing in on 64, though I try not to worry about that. You just have to figure out what you're doing, see if your approach still makes any sense. I'm personally, as I've said here before, somewhat dubious of the United States stock market and the dollar and what's going on in this country. And I've been heavily invested by my standards in mutual funds that own non-U.S. stocks. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the numbers, it was not any great time to be invested in non-U.S. stocks either.
Yeah.
The Dow Jones world, if you exclude the United States, is down 12% for the year.
I would think right now there would be a lot of bargains in the market.
Well, a lot of things are very, very cheap. The market itself is not especially cheap. The other thing is, and I'm very heavily in cash, you know, various money market funds, and money market funds are yielding less than 2%, you know, which is not any great bargain, let me tell you. Though it is, you know, it's better to be up 1% for the year, you know, half of 2, than it is to be down 12. But it's not as if there's anything there that's a great place to be. The bond market, personally, I wouldn't touch because I think interest rates are going up. Mm-hmm. And the stock market is a stock market. Generally speaking, when things have looked the worst for an asset class, it's the time to buy them, but I am not telling you that.
Well, you've been through a lot of these situations, Alan. What is your instinct here? Are we close to the bottom?
I don't think so. And I cannot tell you why. And there were very convincing arguments. We're close to the bottom. I'm very dubious of all of it because we had this huge boom in housing and we had a huge boom in all of these sort of screwball securities. And it was in many ways a bubble. And things go on the upside a lot longer than you think they would. And then when they go bad, then they tend to go down for much longer than you think they would. My bet is we're not at the bottom, but I could be wrong, and I certainly hope I am.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thanks as always.
You're welcome, Scott.
And feel free to share your thoughts with us online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.